Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus. I am Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down U. Before meeting our guest, I'd like to remind you about our partners at BetOnline, your sports information headquarters covering all your wagering needs. From NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, UFC to boxing, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info with live betting options. They also offer your favorite casino and card games that you can play from home. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your bonus. BetOnline, where the game starts. Episode 92 of the podcast welcomes Simon Matheson. He is a former Northwest Missouri State University kicker, but currently he is the American Football Operations and Sales Director for TrackMan. I am absolutely thrilled for this one. I invited Simon on. I don't know him personally, but this is strictly me selfishly being curious about TrackMan. So it is a pleasure. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Dan? Thank you for the nice intro. It's a pleasure to be on here. I look forward to this.
Yeah, I really think highly of people who are objective thinkers. I want to preface it by saying that I think that the elite crave it. They want to know the why. And I think that this is a tool that provides the why. I use like fundamental math and physics, right? Just to justify my beliefs. I don't really ever want to speculate when I deliver information to a player or a coach. And I think that this complements my thinking and it really would help. It'd probably make my job a ton easier. So I want to talk about TrackMan, and for those who don't know, TrackMan is a technology, and it provides like real-time data to these athletes, specifically kickers, correct?
Correct.
And I initially saw the software was being used in the PGA. I was watching like a Sunday round, and I was like, did they just track that ball and show the apex with the data point, with the metric right there live? I was mind blown. And of course, me and anyone who listens to this show is probably thinking the same thing. Could you imagine seeing like a football in place of a golf ball there? And I'm sure you did too, which led you to all this. But, you know, I saw like specialists are starting to use it with you, and this launch angle, this ball speed, the height off the line of scrimmage, the apex, the how fast this ball is spinning before it gets to its destination, like how many rotations even. It really does fascinate me. So could you share like your initial experience with this TrackMan, and could you offer like any advice to coaches and players about how you're using it?
Yeah, for sure. Well, just to start off first with, you're right about the whole PGA Tour stuff, because we started in golf and baseball, and I'm not actually an avid golfer by any means. I would say I'm probably somewhat below average golfer, but I'm the same with you. When I got out of college in 2016 was my last year of playing, I approached TrackMan and I said, hey, why don't you guys use the technology for football? And just like you said, with the broadcast, one of the things that I pitched to TrackMan was like, hey, you know, the broadcasters always talk about like how long a field goal would have been good from or how he sliced it and all these different kind of the height. So I was like, well, why don't we use this for TV? And they had an existing partnership with NBC because they've used some of our stuff on Golf Channel before. And then it was in 2018, they said, all right, we want to use you guys in Sunday Night Football. And that's how that was essentially the birth of TrackMan Football. Yes, coming back to your second question there, Dan, when we started kind of thinking about what do we need to include in the kicking product for TrackMan Football, you know, we kind of logically started looking at, you know, a lot of the things in golf, because I think most people probably agree that golf and kicking is somewhat similar.
Absolutely.
In terms of you just use your leg instead of a golf club. So obviously there's many, you know, things from the golf world we basically just copied over to the football, like you said, ball speed, launch angle, spin rate, the movement of the ball. And then obviously we came up with different, you know, other things, you know, that coaches use, like distance, hang time, ball height at line of scrimmage to see if the ball has a chance of getting blocked, you know, get a better understanding of ball trajectory. And obviously, you know, distance, you know, the good from. And so essentially the whole basis for knowing that stuff is, I think, twofold. There's one, the evaluation piece. You know, for coaches, obviously, the more information you have on a player, the more confident you can make decisions on who might be the best player or who might be the strongest of two players, who might be the most consistent of two players or multiple players. You know, just providing, you know, more objectivity in the evaluation part, I think is important. Obviously, you know, every coach is going to value guys a little differently. And, you know, you got the mental aspect that obviously plays a big part. You got, you know, how is the guy's body language, all these different things that coaches obviously value. But just having, you know, objective data measurements on, you know, this guy's swing and the flight of the ball, I think will add an element that will go from, and you'll hear me say this a lot, take evaluation to go from intuition to what we call evidence-based decisions. So I think that's kind of the number one thing when it comes to evaluation. And I also, this was our first year or second year tracking at the NFL Combine. And I think, you know, just like I've mentioned to many other guys before, you know, you have the Combine for a reason because you're trying to uncover as much information as you can on prospects. And that's what we're trying to do for the kickers.
I'll unpack that very simply. I think it appeals to me in two ways. I think that it's important to grow what it is we do in terms of popularity with the layman's football fan. Instead of leaving, I think people are staying now for the 50-yard field goal because their fantasy team matters now, right? And their fantasy kicker has value. And that's getting people to know a Cairo Santos name, right? Or a Johnny Hecker, I mean, if you're playing defensive points. But yeah. My point being is what you guys are doing is you're teaching people indirectly through visually appealing tracks and metrics, right? That everyone craves now, especially baseball and golf, yeah. Right? But I think football is getting smarter. And I think that you're appealing to a broader base than just me and you and my fourth down podcast. You know, like I think that you're going to start appealing to football fans through this, because again, it's not speculation. It's not vague analysis. Like, oh, he sliced that. What does that mean to a fan that just watched a field goal that he knows nothing about? Nothing. So vague information goes in one ear, out the other, because Correct. It's not evidence-based. It's not appealing. Our brains don't timestamp that as important. So it's really never going to grow.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And I do want to add on, I am so curious to see it, like you mentioned in pre-recording, because like I don't think that it really does it justice to see something like, or yeah, see something like this third person or through like a computer screen. I think that you almost have to experience it, to my knowledge. And I think what it's going to help me with is really justifying, I should say, what it is I'm saying that I believe to be objective. Because I think that when a kid gets outside his drive step and gets out his channel and goes to the ball, he misses left more. And I have the visual on my phone still, but I think the track man can support me that it's indefinitely, you know, going to happen, you know, or not happen, I should say. And I think that's what I'm craving.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're saying that, because that is, you know, one of the things I always kind of iterate, you know, for coaches, that, you know, TrackMan is what I call like the, you know, the perfect complement to your own coaching, because it's basically just going to help support you showing to a client what it is you're teaching and how the results may come from that.
Yes.
So like you said, let's say you're talking to a guy, you know, maybe his trajectory a little low, and you make him do a drill that said, hey, this is going to get your ball a little higher off the ground initially. Okay. Then you use the launch angle and the ball height line of scrimmage to kind of show him, hey, this is the progression you're making. And that leads to the second aspect of it. You know, I was talking about evaluation before, and then this is the second aspect, which I think is player development. And, you know, the player development for me, you know, as a kicker myself too, is obviously the part that I probably care the most about, because I want to know exactly what it is I'm doing that leads to better kicks. So like you said, if you take, you know, one of your kids out there and you support him, you know, with data that says, hey, when you do this, this is how it shows, and you can show him how it's done. You can, you know, you get, you know, the visual from the video. And then, you know, you got, you know, the instincts from your coaching, and then you got the hard data to prove what you're saying is right. And, you know, the more we know, the better adjustments we can make on our technique. So I think the whole part of knowing what it is you're doing is really just about building confidence. Because essentially, if I know, hey, when I'm doing these things and I'm within these ranges of data points, whatever, my field goal percentage will be over 90%. Let's just put it that way. So I know that, hey, if I do this, I'm 90% likely to make my kicks, versus if I'm outside of the parameters, you know, maybe that field goal percentage goes down. And just knowing that, I think, is a massive confidence booster, because it actually tells you to kind of keep things simple. So that, hey, if I just do this, then it will lead to that result. So I think that's what, you know, kind of talking about the why. And, you know, to some extent, you know, we just want the ball to, you know, go through the uprights, because that's what matters.
Sure.
But we want to know what leads to the ball going through the uprights. And I think that's the big part of where TrackMan comes into play, and where I think a lot of coaches and players are kind of realizing that, hey, this can really help them move the needle on their player performance.
I think there's a lot of fear in life, and there's a lot of fear in football, especially with coaching, right? Public and private coaching.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is, I think that in 21 years doing it, I've seen that there's been, how do I say it? Data is a part of everything now. Whether the people who were cynics and skeptics in 2001 were not buying into it, but analytics came, right? And I think that people were fearing that it was going to replace them. But I think what you're saying, what I believe to be true, is it's going to make the best coaches just a little bit better, right? And probably more efficient. And I think that the people who are in the middle of the pack, maybe not the best coaches, are fearing that it's going to replace them. But if they embraced it, it might expedite their coaching process, right? Their growth. And that's my opinion on that. Because I saw it with the analytics and baseball and football, yeah. You know, and the hesitancy, even by people that were currently at the highest of levels. So coaches seek what you mentioned about being repeatable, and it needs to go in. It needs to go in often. Mm. They want guys who are very consistent, right? They want guys who, you know, with a naked eye, a person that doesn't kick or never had a history in it, they don't want to see a ton of variables. They don't want to see a bunch of funky movements. They really just want to see the same process, if you will.
Yeah.
So I want your opinion, because your style is unique, but you're also tall, right? I'm a very personal coach. I need my athlete comfortable before I really make any adjusting.
Yeah.
And it's a progression to what I think is most efficient, but I know it can't go from point A to B in a half an hour. You've got to kind of find that comfort zone.
So I agree.
I want you to tell me, what do you think is the most overlooked variable or a few things that trigger you when you see high level specialists that are underperforming occasionally because of one or two things?
So I think, I'm very much in the same aspect that I believe that, you know, each kicker is very different. There's no one way correct to hit one correct way of hitting a ball. Everyone is going to strike the ball a little different, have a little different approach. So, you know, the variables can be different from player to player. I do think, however, when it comes to variables, there's a couple of things that's always nice. And I think that most coaches will always agree on. It's just like having a couple of concepts that you never move away from. One is, for example, always, you know, to finish your swing down the target line. I think, you know, there's things on that I can improve on my own form as well by doing that. But that is just always my cue. It's like, hey, if I'm slicing, if I'm doing something, you know, that leads to a lot of excess movement, it probably relates to that I'm not finishing down the target line how I want to. So I think, you know, that is probably like one of the things that I always just think about the most is having a consistent swing approach. Because if you're swinging through to the target line, the ball is most likely going to be going more straight as well. And, you know, it's interesting, like, you know, you can adjust a little thing based off the wind and stuff. But at the end of the day, and you know, you want to be consistent with that. I think the only time you really want to change up your swing is like if you have some crazy wind and you got to cut through it with a low launch ball or even aim outside the uprights, which I would probably never recommend. But, you know, other than that, you want to stay consistent with it. The second thing with the variable, I think, too, is just probably just try to be as consistent with your operation as possible. I think I've heard of some guys that want like different leans on the ball depending like on the wind and stuff. I'm a little more of the guy I've tried to keep things simple. So I always want the ball just slightly tilted towards the holder, straight up. No leaning back, no leaning forward. Because I do think, the having a good operation, you're only as good as your operation. You know, everyone has heard that saying before. And I think the more variables you add on to your holder and snapper, you know, the more inconsistent things can get. So I like kind of, you know, hey, so this is just the one way of snapping, is the one way of holding, and that's the approach we're going to go towards. I think that's just kind of like my two like initial things that, hey, these are the things that I'm always consistent with. And then you're going to have variables that kind of play into, like you said, if you're in a slump, for example, and you're trying to identify what's different, well, then, like I said, my swing pattern is the first thing I'm going to look for. A second thing too, I'm going to look for is like, and this is something I use at least a lot personally, it's just my physical shape. Cause I can usually tell, and this is kind of using like mostly like ball speed numbers, is that if I'm not in peak condition or not, because I'm going to see a drop off pretty fast. I know that, you know, my ideal playing weight is somewhat around like 190 pounds, and I'm pretty light for being 6'4", but I'm hitting much higher ball speeds at 190 pounds than I was at 210. I think that came off and just become a lot more explosive in the weight room, and basically trimming down body fat. So I'm very lean now, but I can tell that, you know, okay, so with that body composition, I'll probably be able to hit, you know, my average ball speed and field goals right around 70 miles an hour. But I think like back in October, I was averaging more around like 68.5. And I could kind of tell that maybe my body composition wasn't as good then. But now I'm in great shape again, hitting the same numbers that I want. But those are some of the things that at least I like to, you know, pay attention to when it kind of comes to variables in the kicking game.
That's a pro. And I will say that a lot of people, I'll give you one specific example, Caleb Sturgis at Florida years ago, probably gained about 10, 11 pounds of mass, from like winter, his bowl game to August. So, and it was significant gains, and it was good mass. He was a great athlete.
Yeah.
Still is. But it hurt him. He didn't do as well. And then when he you know, he drew a conclusion. He's like, that was the only variable that was significant was my weight.
Yeah.
And I thought increased mass would bring about higher performance. And it sounds like your example. I think that, man, you know, we can learn a lot from probably once we do this, enough people get in this into these metrics, we could probably draw some generalizations as to whatever BMI or whatever a kid's physicality looks like. Here's 15 examples of a kid with your exact measurements, and this is kind of where they're highest performing with, you know.
Yeah.
But that's stuff down the road, but I think that is the really, really important stuff.
Yeah.
And I just want to say with your two thoughts, because I know these young guys listen, I want to go piggyback off that. I think that if you want to finish, you mentioned finishing down the line, or you want to adjust the finish, I think it's all about the approach angle. I think kids get too married with three back, two over, and find a perfect way of doing whatever that is. Because let's be honest, their sidesteps are erratic. One's bigger than the other.
Yeah.
Whatever. Or they're both too big or both too small. I still don't think even a kid that has flawless 3-2, whatever that means, I think it's dangerous to get married to it if he's not finishing well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, back to Newton's third law, I said fundamental science, it has to come in and leave to where your intention is. And if it doesn't match, we've got to maybe make an adjustment. And it could be 2-3 inches wider or narrower, correct?
It's such a great point, Dan, because, and I'm going to give you an example. And this is using myself an example again. In the TrackMan software, we have a measurement that measures the launch direction of the ball relative to the center of the uprights. It's called side projected. And basically, it's an indication of your launching point. So, like, are you aiming down the middle, or are you aiming to the left or to the right? When I came about 2-3 years ago, when I kind of really started kicking on the TrackMan a lot, I started noticing that all my balls started a little left off the upright. So, you know, 0 is straight down center, and then 5L is like indicating, okay, your ball started 5 feet left of the center of the uprights. And then right is obviously just the other way. And I was kind of I sliced my ball a little bit. So I was always starting at like 8-9L on my ball flight. But also when I look at video from back then, you know, my leg was just coming straight across my body and I wasn't kicking as efficient. I made those adjustments over the past couple of years. Like we talked about, just the swinging, try to have a more downfield swing and basically use my body momentum a lot more. I think that's why I think a lot of people watch me will probably say that I'm a very aggressive kicker, is that I really try to attack the ball. But for me, one of the reasons why I do that is because I feel like that using a body momentum really forces my leg to go downfield. And now,
I think it also, I don't interrupt, but do you think it also restricts non-linear movements, you know, with the rate of change? Because you have less time to mess up, right? You're more direct.
So.
If you
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, because if you don't come through with your body, your leg has more room to swing across versus with your body coming through. When you make contact, you know, everything is kind of going more towards downfield. But coming back to that, so now, you know, I started as like a 9L, 10L guy when it came to my aiming points relative to the uprights, versus now everything I aim is pretty much down the middle. And basically that has taken that slice of my ball flight that I had about 2-3 years ago. So I think, you know, again, to the point of just aiming towards the target line, you know, it's for me, I use that to basically change my swing because I could tell, hey, I saw it on video. I saw it on my data points. I was like, hey, I'm aiming left and I have that little slight, you know, fade to the ball and I don't really want that. And, you know, you kept making adjustment. I got closer to 0 and 0. And for me, that was a big confidence thing. Cause like we talked about earlier, I knew exactly how I was doing. I used the video to see, and I used the data to confirm what it was I was doing. And that made my confidence go up and actually helped me become much more efficient in how I swing.
I was going to say it empowers. It sounds like it's an empowering tool, right? If you use it and you know how to apply it and have a good current process, I think we should stress this because I'm seeing a buzz about TrackMan and I don't think it's made to improve you. I think it's your job to improve, but when you have things that maybe are, I want to go a little further with this. I need some analytics involved, just some higher level stuff, some concrete evidence. Because I think a lot of kids have a fear of changing, but I think if it's proven back to evidence based, I think you're going to have more people receptive to changing for the better, for their better versions of themselves. I think we're never a final draft, but I think that chasing perfection equals professionalism, right?
Yeah, I agree. I'd say I feel like pretty much everyone that I've worked with and met so far are very receptive to learning, because I think if you understand, you know, that the more you know about yourself can help make yourself get better, you want to get better. And, you know, and I think, you know, at least all the guys that I've met have all been very hungry for success. And that's, you know, across, you know, high school, college and NFL. And I think guys are buying into that. And I think a second point, too, is, you know, for me, and I'm always the first to reiterate this, we don't want numbers just to have numbers or because it may look cool. We want it because it's supposed to verify things. And it's supposed to tell a story about your form that you can make to help yourself get better. That's why, you know, we've actually started with our customers, tracking customers, spending a lot more time on actually really identifying data trends so we can show the kids or, you know, the professionals saying, hey, you know, when you do this, this leads to that result. And then the guys have something concrete they can go after and say, this is my baseline and this is what leads to success. And, you know, so again, I'm the first one to say that I'm not an over analytical kind of guy. I think it's just more about taking the numbers, try to make it simple, see, you know, how do you use them as a recipe for success, and then you follow that. And I think that's the best way to utilize a system like TrackMan.
I love what you said. And I have one final question. I like to help manage my athletes' activities on and off the field. I really encourage like high repetition, low weight, explosive activities, jumping. Like, I don't really need weights per se, but weights are nice. Weights are nice if you have them, but we can really get a lot done off of them. And then I really stress, I'm not really married to 10 kickoffs today. You know, let's do this tomorrow and like really chart it out like football does per se, right? Instead, what I think it should be is learned. And I think that as we get every year older, we must work more efficiently. The goal is to bring the reps down, like track your reps. Hopefully you do that, right? But now you can for sure with this stuff. But I want your opinion on the monetization of athletes and maybe how you're using it or how you used it for yourself, because you did mention that you drew a conclusion with your mass. And when you were 190, you were much more effective than when you were above 200. Are there any other examples of when I'm going to find like I'm coming to a point where I'm fatigued and it may be best to shut it down?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I try to, you know, basically, you only want to kick, in my opinion, at least, kind of when you are fresh or relatively fresh. It's my old, you know, experience that if I go out, try to kick after heavy leg day, I'm not doing myself any favors. And I like to be pretty organized in my practices or my self-kicking. And so what I'll do is that I'll try to never go over 30, 35 kicks in a session. And the reason for that is that if you do that, if I do that too often, too much, then I just started noticing a little drop down in my numbers, just a little decrease. I feel like I hit, you know, my best, you know, balls, like, you know, up to about 30. And then if I can stay around, you know, let's say 71 miles an hour. And then if I get up to like 40 or 50, then I can tell, okay, maybe I'm not swinging as efficient. My ball speeds go down a little bit, or if I need to hit the same ball speed, I feel like I have to put much more effort into it. And that's when I can kind of tell myself, okay, now I need to stop because now I'm not kicking efficiently. So I think that's been a big help for me in terms of like managing my workload, is I know, okay, this is kind of like the optimal amount of kicks that I can do in a session. And then I'm going to try to stick with that, because you're right. You rather have quality over quantity for sure. Game day is obviously going to be a little different because you're going to hit probably a lot more than just 30 kicks on game day. But I will say I'm a big, you know, that I wouldn't say overly too caught up in like in a script of kind of what your warm up looks like, but I would never just go out there and just start hitting, you know, I had two misses and all of a sudden you start hitting 25 balls just because you want to find yourself. I was just trying to keep it relatively simple, make sure you don't overkick. But like I said, I think coming back to the whole, you know, weight, you know, and body load again, it's just that I just felt for me that being a little lighter makes me move better. And so sure. I think how I changed that was just do a lot more explosive training with sprinting. Like you said, box jumps. I don't really go too heavy on weights anymore. The only thing I kind of ever put on more than 225 is hand cleans. Other than that, you know, it's just down, up, explosive, and trying to keep that explosivity. Because also, if you see me, I mean, I'm not a big kind of moving weight guy in the weight room by any means. So, you know, I feel like every kicker is a little different. But for a guy like me, I think I just realized that my power comes from being explosive. Obviously, you need strength, but I think, you know, you create power by, you know, either what's the mass or through
force is mass times acceleration.
Exactly, right? Times acceleration. Exactly, that's the one. And I think, you know, for my production of speed, it just comes more from acceleration than it does from mass. And that's how my approach has been to, you know, basically just become more, a little more aggressive in my swing, but also, like I said, just get lighter, get faster so I can swing my leg a lot faster.
I tell guys too, and that when I see guys like you that are 6'3" and or better, right? Mm-hmm. And I have kids that are very proficient at 5'9". Some of my best kids I've ever had have been 5'9", 5'10", 5'11".
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like as far as kicking goes.
Yeah, makes 100% good sense.
I think that those guys only were successful because there becomes a time when you go to college, especially when Simon walks in the room and it's me or Simon. If I go and try and kick like Simon is, who's a 3-iron, and I am anatomically speaking related to golf, I'm a 7-iron. I can't chase Simon in the middle of the fairway.
Yeah.
I got to let Simon outperform me in the beginning of a par 5. But I need to kill him in the final third. I need to keep myself in a position to where my short game becomes my strength, because it becomes harder for you as we get closer hole, but I can't compete with you off the tee, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think if we relate that to football, draw parallels. If you played soccer, I did. That was my sport. My dad's English. My dad taught me very quickly, the faster the athlete you're, if we're in transition and you're on defense, the faster the kid you're against, the closer you get. And if he's faster than you, get some cloth, right? Get some body. Like, do not allow him to have space.
Yeah.
Deny it. And I think we've all learned that in soccer, but all these things, you know, and I could go on forever with you, but I do like that you supported my belief in, don't be a weight room warrior per se. You don't have to prove yourself by your squat total.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's going to love you if you make a few game winners.
Yes.
And the second, you know, and the second you make one, you really need to remind yourself of the importance of you, because this is a team sport. They don't care if you squat well. All they really need you to do is be effective on fourth down or to kick a game off. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for your time, man. And I just want to ask you a simple one. If people just want to connect with you, can you give me one way that you prefer that they could reach you?
Yeah, just on Twitter is good. You can just tag me in wherever this post is, or you can use my email too, sma@trackman.com. And I'm always willing to talk to people, always willing to, you know, spread the word of, you know, my thoughts on kicking or Trackman or anything really in relation to that. So yeah, it's definitely a pleasure being on here, Dan. And I thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, keep doing great things, man. And I think I can speak for everyone. It means a lot that you shared this time with us. I just want you to continue to follow the show. You know, this has just been an honor. I'm almost at 100 episodes, and I get guys like this now who, you know, the purpose of me doing this is I learn. You know, I crave like to understand things, you know, and when I see things that are appealing, I just want to learn about them. You know, I love newness. I think that's how we all grow. So thank you for being one of those guys that influences me, you know?
Yeah, thank you, Dan. I think that's actually a great point because, you know, I know I'm the one who might be giving a lot of advice to kind of in today's podcast, but that's when I'm out with people always trying to be an open book. Because like you said, you know, everyone can learn from each other. And, you know, some people might have some thoughts on how to use TrackMan or other things that I haven't thought of before that, wow, that would make perfectly good sense. And I think you're right because, you know, when you surround yourself with good and smart people, you're going to get smarter and better yourself.
And don't say stagnant. We say that a lot on this show, right? Don't say stagnant. Don't be complacent. All that. Those are ugly, right? Ugly words.
Well, my coach always say, you either get worse or you get better.
Amen. You never stay the same. Yeah, you really don't, right? You'd like to think you could just stay where you worked, but if you stay there, someone's still working, right? So, hence you go.
Exactly.
My website is fourthdownu.com. Social media, fourthdownu. Very simple. Thank you again, Simon, and thanks again for joining us, man, at Fourth Down Focus, presented by Bet Online. I will see you next week. I'm going to get back on schedule. I'm back in town for a little while. I have a really exciting guest. Thank you, as always, and remember, in all things, give thanks.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.